And then a local bloke called Andy Ackley approached me, I don't know what year, and said, look, you know, there's this touring car series in Britain,
yeah.
You know, would you do it with me? There's new Honda Civics. And I bought a Honda Civic, and somebody else ran it. I didn't run it, but that was the first foray. The following year, Honda brought out the CRX series.
Yeah.
So I got three cars. I bought and did that with Andy.
So you
Rick
were you running out of the Honda dealership or a separate?
My out of the dealership.
Out the back of it, sort
yeah.
of thing. Yeah.
I ran Rick Shortle, Andy Ackley, and Tim Lee Davey.
Right.
And we weren't doing very well. We thought, this is weird, you know. I don't know what's going on. Cause I don't know how to assemble cars. It was all done by my mechanics.
Sure.
We didn't employ anybody. It was just all in-house. So we got a chap called Paul Tafton one day to do a test at Silverstone, and he went around half a second quicker than the other lads.
Right.
And they looked at each other and said, it's down to us then,
okay.
which
yeah,
is good.
The car.
And then we won the championship for the next 2 years. In fact, we were 1-2, 1-2 in the championship
right.
for the following two
good.
Years. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then, what did we do? I then got involved in touring cars.
Mm.
Yeah.
With your own teams?
Yes. Now we were getting, well, I did that. Oh, no. Tell a lie. My goodness, I changed from there. What then happened is that a chap called Mickey Van Hall came over.
Right.
Who is the Van Hall family.
Yeah.
And they were sponsors of Surtees. And in fact, they gave us a trailer, a bare trailer, which we converted.
Yeah.
Just gave us the bare trailer. So, and Jan Van Hall, one of the brothers, used to come and stay with me in the summer and work on the team.
Right.
So anyway, his younger brother, Mickey, wanted to go, was doing Formula 3, and he started in Europe. And they said, would you look after him? Would you take him around some of the teams?
Right.
You know, when he comes over to see what it's all about.
Yeah.
So we went to about two or three teams, and I heard all the spiel and everything. I thought, oh, yeah, they know he's got money.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we could drive for XYZ team. I said, you can drive for Lotus Formula 1 if you want.
Yeah.
So what do you mean? I said, give us a checkbook.
Yeah.
And they said, oh.
Really?
So then eventually, after all going around, I didn't sell it. They said, would you run him? I said, what do you mean? But would you set a team up and run him? I went, yeah, I suppose I could.
Yeah.
This would be 1991.
But the dealership is still going on as well.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Right.
So I said, yeah, okay. So I said, I'll tell you what we do. Let's buy a year-old route and just get you out and do some miles and things. And, there's a chap who came to work with me called Adrian Brown, who was David Bradman's mechanic when David won the British Championship.
Right.
So Adrian was
so
the link into
the car.
Us.
Yeah.
Because Lisa Bradman drove for me in CRXs, and that's
okay.
why I met David. So. So we set up a Formula 3 team for him, and then went to the first race at Thruxton, my little one-car team.
Mm-hmm.
And
this was still with a year-old route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rick Gorn came up to me from Reynard and said, I've seen how you operate. Would you run our works team? I said, what do you mean? He said, we've got Gilles de Ferran.
Yeah.
He said, we're running it in-house. He said, would you run Gilles for us in your team? And I said, well, we're anyway, we ended up doing an amazing deal where I had two Reynards and we were the works team as such. Now, this is coming from not doing anything. And we had Rolly Vencini come as the engineer. Do you know Rolly?
No.
No, he was an ex-Brabham bloke. But yeah, very strong in his opinions. And he worked for Reynard, and we had a mechanic come for Gilles and all the development stuff, which was good. And it was okay, the car. It wasn't amazing. And I remember going to Brands Hatch, because Routes were the car at the time. And I walked around the grid and I thought, something wrong here. You know, all these routes got these huge wings on. We've got this tiny little aerodynamic thing on the back.
Right.
And I said to Ray, I said, look, this is wrong here. Well, I said, look, can I test a bigger wing on it?
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. So they actually put Christian Fittipaldi in the car at Snet. And he went out the first real run. He was like 3/10 quicker. He said, unbelievable. He said, huge understeer.
Right.
So then we worked on it,
mm-hmm.
went to the next race and won it. So just that common sense thing.
Surely.
You know. You look at things and you
say,
hang on, this is odd. And then the Reynard won a few races that year, which is pretty good, with Gilles. He then went off to Paul Stewart's
yeah.
and left me in the lurch as such. And then I ran various people in Formula 3. I ran Ollie Gavin, and finished second because I was bought to Lara's halfway through the year. Then he went off to do Formula 1 with Pacific, which of course never happened. Yeah. He then came back in 95 and we won the British Formula 3 Championship with him, which I was very pleased about.
And you're still in Edenbridge at this point?
Still running the team from the back of the garage.
Excellent.
Yeah, always, yeah.
Excellent.
It was excellent, yeah. And some of the boys on the in the garage came and worked at weekends with us. It was all done from there.
Yeah. I bet they enjoyed it too.
Yeah, it was good.
Absolutely. So you carried on with the... So that was F3 still.
Yeah. Won the British Formula 3 Championship.
In?
95 with Ollie. Then I made a big mistake.
You went into F3000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a racer. I'm not a businessman when it comes to racing. I should have stayed in Formula 3 and made a lot of money by running, you know, people with big checks, and I didn't. Because there was the new 3000 started. Charlie Whiting lived opposite, because I knew Charlie very well. Mm. And, of course, he was involved in the Formula 1. And I said, Charlie, I want to do this. He said, that's a good idea, mate. First season, good idea. Get in there. So I bought a couple of cars, and nobody wanted to drive for us. Because although we'd won the British Formula 3 Championship, we'd done nothing. And, you know, in 3000, people didn't know who we were. And I was really, 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 I couldn't believe it. Because we had a fantastic team.
Yeah.
Really, honestly, brilliant engineers. Everything was correct. Couldn't get a driver. I ended up with a French lad, who obviously had never had much money, but wanted to do Poe, and a Swedish-English man, whose dad was a con man, of no doubt, I'm sure. And not particularly quick. And we went off and did the first couple of races, three races, and then the Frenchman ran out of money, so I had one car. And then that guy didn't want to pay. He was dodgy. And so there I was, having been very successful the year before, with two lovely cars and a nice little truck and all the equipment. And we even had a Van Hall coach hospitality unit. I mean, it was really
nice.
Smart.
Yeah,
everything
what
was done.
Cars were they being picked?
They're all Lolas in those days. It was fixed Lolas.
Yeah.
So we got to a stage where I didn't have a driver. And then somebody phoned me up and said, look, there's a bloke you ought to try. He hasn't got much money and he hasn't got a drive. A bloke called Tom Christensen.
Right.
And I said, okay, you know, what's he got? They said, well, he's got $5,000 from, he's got a German sponsor. He wants to do Hockenheim. I said, yeah, okay. So we went and finished fourth in his first race, and I thought, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Mm. It's obviously the light bulb in there that matters and not everything else.
Yeah.
And so we then went to the next race, which was Spa. Again, we only had Tom, and he had no money at all. And my old long-term friend's mezzanine floor company who had sponsored me for years said, look, we'll give you $5,000, Pete. And we went to Spa, didn't take the hospitality, just had the truck, other teams fed us, and in fact, friends Diane Stu Spires, who worked for us at Surtees, fed me from Benetton and things to the team. It was all very friendly. We had one practice session because the other one was rained off, and Tom put it on pole. I went, whoa, what is this about?
Blimey, that's better.
Yes, and in fact, he screwed up at the race because he made a bad start. I think we finished third or second. It was very close.
Still.
And then he had a huge race in Silverstone where he was neck and neck for the lead and again finished second. And I always remember Max actually wrote an article about budgets in motor racing. He said, my good friend Peter Briggs, I thought, oh, that's fair enough, I'm your friend now, went to Spa with actually no money, put it on pole. You don't need huge budgets to do all this, which is true to a certain extent. So then after that, because of Tom, we then got people in the car, like Cachero and people like that, to finish the season.
And Tom was finished by then.
Well, you didn't have any money. Exactly. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't afford it, you know. It was costing me money as it was to get him where he was.
Sure.
And then he got picked up by other people, which I'm really pleased for. You know, because it did us both good.
Of course.
You know, it gave him the leg up. People saw where he was going, what he was capable of. And so, and my team. So the following year, I ended up with a Brazilian driver and a South African, Werner Lutberger, brilliant young lad, brilliant, nice, very lovely family. And my goodness me, how can I forget someone's name who drove me for two seasons?
Brazilian.
Louis, Max Wilson.
Oh, sure.
Stupid, that's right, total brain.
Didn't he go to IndyCars?
Yeah, he did all sorts. But Max I had Max and Werner. Werner would do whatever we asked him to do. He was brilliant. Sadly, Max would not believe you or listen to you and would get very angry and things. And very stupid little bloke, really. I remember we were at Oschersleben and we were on the pit wall. It was a drying circuit. Mm-hmm. And I watched someone come in and saw how quick they were straight away. And I said, in Max now, this lap. Signal board. What, now? In Max now. Whoa, one more lap. In Max now. He did two more laps.
Right.
The guy he was in front of pitted and won the race.
Right.
If he'd have listened, he would have won it.
Yeah.
But he would never, ever, ever listen. And that was his big failing.
Yeah.
But they stayed on the second year, both drivers, which I was very proud of, to actually, because they both paid proper budgets.
Yeah.
And to have two drivers continue with it nice. Is a very, very good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, then the cars changed, and there was a new car for 98.
Yeah.
99. And it was going to be a tough year because everyone wanted to get in, and Bernie was trying to restrict it. So, first of all, he said, right, anybody who wants a car, I've got to pay up front for them. Right. So, in like August, we had to pay up front for them. Then Bernie came, right, you've got to pay for your engines up front in September, which is a serious big investment going out here. But we ended up still with too many cars in the championship.
Right.
Can I stop a minute?
Hmm? Yeah, sure.
I need to wait. Yeah. So it was a pretty bad time for motor racing because we had possibly 32 cars, these new series, all identical. But you go to some races, there'd be 24 starters, Monaco 20, and they did pre-qualifying for 20 minutes or something. And I still had Werner Luttberger from the year 2 years before driving for me. But I realised at certain events he would struggle to qualify, as a lot of people would. Yeah. We're talking, you know, nearly half the grid not qualifying. Mm. And when people were paying £500,000 to drive for the season, I thought it was wrong for Werner, because I knew the family and everything. And I was worried about the situation. And I was approached by a chap called Paul Stoddart, who was helping to sponsoring Tyrrells at the moment. He had a little aviation business. And he wanted to buy into a team. And I thought, well, look, I can't see how this is going to work this year, because we're going to struggle to get drivers who guarantee it.
Right.
So he came in and basically funded it, but he wanted his own drivers and his own selection, this and this and this and this. And so I said to Werner, look, mate, I think this is the best thing. And what I actually did, I moved him to another team in England with my cards and gave them all the setups and helped them and do that. For there was a European series going on of the old cars.
Yeah.
So then we were going to run Jamie Davies and Ollie Gavin under European Aviation. He brought some of his people in, and the plan was it would stay in Edenbridge until the end of the year, and then he would take it to his place at Ledbury.
Okay.
All right. And so he guaranteed he'd pay all the staff to the end of the year, the rent for the premises where I was, all that sort of stuff. Right. It was all laid down back and away. So it was a very, I shall say, basic sort of Australian. and we went to a few races and went to Monaco and finished, got points at Monaco, which is good. Should have had more, but Jamie sadly got balked on the last corner in qualifying. But, you know, it was very up and down. Went to Manicor, and neither driver qualified. Missed by thousands, but we didn't, you know, it was possible.
Yeah.
And he immediately said, I'm taking the team. I'm having it. It's coming back to mine. You've sabotaged the team. You sent them out with the wrong tyre pressures. Absolute lies, of course, of everything.
Mm.
Tony Jardine was working for him doing press. Had a press release already done, so it was all pre-planned. And I want it back. I want it straight back to go straight back to Ledbury in his place. And I said, well, look, okay. I said, but we've got to stop in Edenbridge because I've got stuff in there that belongs to me that isn't yours. Sure. You know, obviously I'm not happy about any of this and all this. He spoke to the truckie. He said, if you don't go straight back, I'm suing you personally for everything you've got. I mean, man is nasty.
Mm.
So Then I got a call from my... So we agreed that we're going back. I then get a call from my secretary saying, Peter, he said, we've got four big blokes outside. He'd sent four heavies into my garage premises where the race team was based, to stand there waiting for the trucks to come back. Big heavies. Mm. He demanded that we went straight to his place. I said, no, we're going to stop in Edenbridge. We'll swap stuff over and all that sort of stuff. He then had people waiting at Dover to meet the trucks.
Right.
And when it came, he took and off he went with his stuff. None of my staff went. All right, the engineers, none of them, because they all realised what a nasty bit of work this man was. Mm. Okay, fine. All right. I said, lads, it's okay, lads. You know, I'm paying you. It's all sorted.
Sure, you know.
And I was heartbroken because, you know, I just couldn't believe what this bloke had done. He was threatening to sue my wife at the time. And myself, for shareholders, for this, for everything we've got. And, you know, he had a lawyer employed full-time by himself. Right. You know, he was a nasty, nasty man. So, okay, you know. At least then, of course, he never paid.
Right.
Never paid, never paid. So I had the upper hand because what he had, what you had to do then is there was a company called Side Puma Limited, which actually held the entrance license,
right,
which is a company I had. Now, you needed that with the points to go ahead for the following years. So I spoke to Max, because I got quite well with Max, believe it or not, and he was actually helping my solicitor and all this sort of stuff. And we had him, because we had, at the end of the year, because I had the points, he would have had to pay me to get the company to do the entry, which is fine. And it was about 150,000. So then... I had the court case ongoing, and then we received a letter that the FIA had granted him permission to change the name without the company, which is totally against FIA regulations and all that sort of stuff. But obviously I think that Bernie and Max realised there was this Australian man who was going to put money into Formula One, must be more important than Pete Briggs, and so basically turned me over. So we still went ahead with the court case, but he had folded that company who was handling it.
So
it ended up with nothing. So, not a very nice taste, actually.
To finish with.
Yeah, and it was. And I, to this day, I'm sure it's because they realised this idiot Australian was going to put money into everything.
Yeah.
He actually didn't have a lot of money. Everything he had was borrowed and everything was second hand. He bought all the Tyrrell stuff, and
I went up to his place.
And it was all decked out with computers and everything, but none of them were connected. You know, he had loads of second-hand, rusty old trucks. Everything he had was second-hand and nasty.
Mm.
And that, sadly, was what the bloke was like. And he dealt in second-hand aircraft parts.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
anyway. That's right.
Bell never had to deal with them again. So, anyway, forget him. And then I stopped for a while, concentrated on my garages and stuff.
Still,
So
you still had the dealership? Dealerships?
That was still going and that was all happening.
Yeah.
And then, what did I do? I got involved in touring cars.
Yes. Talking about Macau.
I worked with Barry Bland, actually.
Right.
Because part of the problem with Stoddart and everything, I also received about the same time a letter from Honda saying that they wanted to change their policy and they didn't want to deal with dealer operators. They wanted big groups.
Right.
So they terminated like a third of the dealer network, me being one of them. Mm. So from earning a lot of money, I was all of a sudden zero. And then I had Stoddart and then I got divorced.
Yeah.
So it all hit me. So it was all a bit of a mess at the time, to be honest with you. It was all a bit nasty. And I think Stoddart had a lot to do with the divorce, actually, because... it affected her as well as me.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a particularly nice situation.
You mentioned Macau.
Yeah, so what happened? Working. That's right. So anyway, back in when I was doing Formula 3, my wife didn't want me to go to Macau or travel without her. I don't know, she had one of these things, not travelling together. And Barry Bland was running Macau. And when I split up with my wife, he phoned me up. He said, "You're coming to Macau." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You're coming to work with me. You should have been here with your team. You're coming." And so I went to Macau for a number of years, assisting Barry Bland in running the Macau event.
Right.
Which was most enjoyable. Most enjoyable. Yeah. I only did it there. I didn't do anything back in England with him. But we also did Bahrain once, and we also did Korea a couple of times. Right. There's a nice little story about Bahrain. It's Formula 3. And Lewis and Nico were doing Formula 3. and they both crashed at Macau, the long thing. Both tried to outbrake each other, and they neither would back off. So we went to Bahrain, and amazing circuit for Formula 3. And on the podium, Lewis won from nearly the back of the field with about two laps to go. Amazing slipstreaming drive. And on the podium, he was in tears. And I said, well, what's up?
Yeah.
He said, well, McLaren have dropped me. He said, well, I'm just praying this will turn it around.
Yeah.
And it did. Oh, we may not have a six-time world champion. Amazing.
If he hadn't
So I did Macau with him. And then I was at Macau. I got involved, watched the touring cars, and my sponsor friends were with me. We got involved and bought a couple of BMWs and ran in the BMWs in Europe initially, and then Britain, and then I did more things like that with BMWs, which I didn't enjoy. They're not my thing.
Sort of thing.
No, they bash into each other.
Yes, and that's right.
Not necessary. So I didn't really enjoy that very much. And then I ran a couple of young drivers from Macau, China, over here, set teams up, well, set a team up for the first one, but the second one I placed him somewhere and just taught him.
Yeah.
And I always remember we went off to, it's a Macau driver, and the plan was they always wanted a driver in their race at the end of the year, and this lad had been doing karting. And I met him, and we did arrange what I was going to do. I said, right, I want you to do two or three Formula Ford races first.
Yeah.
So we went off to Anglesey, and I booked it exclusively with the team, Falcon Motorsport, and got their driver there. And I said, look, if we do it this way, it's cheap, but, you know,
you get used to it.
Yeah, without any problems, it's private, there's nobody else on the track. So we're driving up. I said, you've driven a car, haven't you? No. I said, I know you haven't driven a race car, a road car. No.
Oh.
What do you mean you've never driven a road car? No. I said, well, like in a drive, you know, perhaps... No. I said, so you've never used a clutch? No.
Oh, blimey.
I went, okay. So I got in the car park at the hotel and taught him what a clutch was and things like that. And then next
how old would he have been, Pete?
How
old would he have been?
19.
Right.
18, probably. he'd been doing European karting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
there's no clutch.
People took him around and that was it. So then we got him in the hire car for about an hour, going around the circuit. Then we put him in the Formula Ford car. And then we went off and did races that year, the end of the year it was. And he actually did all right. He was actually quite good.
Yeah.
And then we were running him in Formula 3 the next year. And I put him with RR Racing. And they looked after him and he did those races. And then at the end of the year he said, nothing. Didn't even say goodbye. He just goes off. Not thanks a lot for everything you've done for me. And next year he came back and drove for somebody else, but...
Funny, isn't it?
Chinese, very strange.
Strange, isn't it? And what's he doing now, saying that?
Nothing. He gave up. He did 3 years and then stopped. Just stopped. He wasn't really into it. He was more interested in his helmet with little diamantes in and special boots and things like that. Really, honestly. Yeah. Not there.
So what year would that have been, Pete?
That was, my goodness me, I can't remember now. Probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
So you were straight after that. You went to West Surrey Racing.
I did bits then, just freelance bits. Yeah. Just did freelance bits did with the touring car team. Did some A1 stuff and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
That was before then, actually.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, just doing.